on February 12th, 2007. And I open the public hearing on 2189. And Andy.
Thank you, Chair. House Bill 2189 would expand mandatory child abuse reporting requirements to also include incidents of likely child abuse. It also would increase the scope of child abuse investigations to include those situations of likely child abuse.
Okay. Thank you. We have Una Swanson. And, okay. Welcome back, Una.
Good morning, Chair Tomei.
Wait, just a minute, Una. We also have the amendments. Andy, you want to talk about
just the for information for the members and for the members of the public that are here today, there is a proposed amendment to the House bill, a dash one amendment, which is on the side table that will be, I believe, explained by the department this morning. Also, for the members and the public, there's another stapled group of paper or set of paper, which is also the amendment, but it actually lists kind of the statute and then the places in the amendment, which is a little different than the amendment itself. They both regard the same amendment.
Okay. Thank you, Andy. And welcome again, Anna.
Good morning, Chair Tomei, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Una Swanson, and I'm the Child Protective Services Program Manager for the Department of Human Services. And we appreciate this opportunity to have this bill heard. I'm testifying today in support of House Bill 2189. This bill was introduced by the governor at the request of the Department of Human Services, and it was an effort on our part to clarify the mandatory reporting statute as it relates to threatened harm. The original proposed language, the original bill language, we learned very quickly, had some unintended consequences and seemed to broaden the responsibility of mandatory reporters, and that was not our intent at all. So we have now offered the amendment that you see before you, and I'll be happy to talk you through that. It may be easiest for you to look at the amendment where you see some crossouts and some underlined language. And this is what we gave to Legislative Council, and just to see it in context, because there's a lot that's changed. But, and I'll be happy to crosswalk between the two if that's helpful. As you, hopefully we're looking all at the same page. It's reporting of child abuse, and you'll go down that page to G that's crossed out. Threaten harm to a child, which means subjecting a child to a substantial risk of harm to the child's health or welfare. That definition of threatened harm was very broad. It's not clear exactly what it's getting at. It doesn't relate back to the other definitions of abuse that are listed above it. We think the concept of threatened harm is an important concept for the mandatory reporter to understand. So our effort in clarification was to make this definition more specific. So if you continue down that page to what's a new J, we would propose to change that definition, excuse me, we would propose to change that definition to substantial threat that a child will experience or be subjected to one of the conditions and circumstances described in paragraphs A through I. So essentially what we're saying is that a mandatory reporter would be responsible to report, thank you very much, report one of the abuse types listed above by definition, or if they believe that there are conditions and circumstances that pose a substantial threat of one of those abuse types. And the mandatory reporter, of course, doesn't have to know that for sure, but it really clarifies it in terms of it's not a vague definition of the child's health or welfare. It's specific to the abuse types in the statute. I'd like to point out that the proposed amendment, the language in that particular definition is just slightly different. Substantial threat that a child will experience or be subjected to one of the conditions or circumstances described in this paragraph. And we believe that that's the same. It refers back to those definitions of abuse. That is the primary focus of this amendment, to provide for that clarity. I'd like to let the committee know today that we have been contacted by a number of groups with concerns, for the most part, with the original bill language, but we've been contacted by the Defense Bar, by some faith-based organizations. Talked to someone from the ACLU this morning. We really appreciate their clarification in this and their comments, and it is not our intent to broaden their responsibility or to make this language less clear to them. And we're looking forward to an opportunity to work with them a little bit more to make sure we have their input in moving this forward. So thank you very much for allowing this to be heard, and I'm available as a resource to the committee if there are questions.
Una, could you go through this with this? That would be very helpful for me.
Okay. This with the amendment?
Correct.
Okay. I'll start with the proposed amendment. On page 1 of the printed bill, line 2, after or...
Are you here or I'm confused? You're here. When you say
I'm looking at these two. I'm looking
Great.
At the proposed amendment,
Great.
And
okay.
I'm looking at what we gave the Legislative Council.
Great.
I'm sorry.
Thanks. When she refers here, this will be the bill as well.
This
you're
one?
Going to need the bill out as well, because
so
this is line 2 on the bill.
Just carry on.
Okay, so you are referring to this as well. Is that what you're saying, or are you just referring to this?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I was originally referring to what we sent to Legislative Council because it's just a little bit easier read.
Great. Okay. So we'll just look at those two items.
Okay.
For the time being.
And if you look at the bill itself, the original bill language, I can walk you through briefly the changes that the amendment makes to that.
Okay. Now I'm confused.
Now I am too. So okay. let's just use these
okay.
two items, and then we'll get back to the original bill.
Okay. But how can we use the amendment with this?
Because I think it's incorporated in this. Isn't that correct?
No.
No. Okay. The amendment is to this. Is that correct? This amendment.
The amendment will be to this proposed statute itself. So that's where the lines are confusing. So really,
you have to really use all three.
Really use all three, I believe, would be the way to go.
Okay.
So these two, in addition to the bill.
All right.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, if I might make a recommendation, why don't we go back to the original bill, and I'll just walk through the changes there, and I'll let you know what we've inserted and what's been removed.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Thank you. So we're looking at House Bill 2189. If you're on line 2, the amendments will remove the following statutes from consideration, and 419750, 417815, 419005, 419007, 419010, 419015, 017, 020, 025, 035, 040, 045. And then what we'll come back to is this bill now only addresses the statutes 005, 020, and 025.
Okay. Are we okay there?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Proceed.
Move down to line 27, where it says negligent treatment. Negligent treatment or maltreatment of a child, including but not limited to failure to provide adequate food, clothing, shelter. The amendment adds the language supervision, protection, or medical care that is likely to endanger the health. The amendment or the bill removes welfare and adds the word safety. So some slight changes under neglect.
Representative Cote.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, Ms. Swanson. How are we going to define supervision or protection? Is that already in statute somewhere?
Madam Chair, Representative Kotek, our proposal to Legislative Council added the language protection. Mm-hmm. I don't think that we had added supervision. But our supervision and protection are defined in our administrative rule, and I know that is not helpful to you, but that's good information for us to have, and I'll make note of that. Thank you. If you move down to line 30, the bill removes the definition threatened harm to a child, which means subjecting a child to a substantial risk of harm to the child's health or welfare. And again, the department felt the term health or welfare was very broad and didn't relate back to the specific definitions of abuse. The amendment adds a J to this bill, and it adds this definition, substantial threat that a child will experience or be subjected to one of the conditions or circumstances listed in the above paragraph.
Yes, Representative Cote.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the threat of harm, so this will change the definition of threat of harm that we track here as a state. Is that correct?
Chair Tomei, Representative Kotek, yes, it would change and make more specific the definition of threat of harm.
Follow up. Is this in closer sync to other states? I know we're unique among other states in terms of how we track threat of harm. And I was just curious, this definition, if there was any research done and tried to align ourselves with other states on this particular category, I'm just curious.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Chair Tomei, Representative Kotek, in our research, what we found in a number of other states, the way in which they approach the concept of threat of harm is to include it in the actual definitions of abuse. For example, they might say physical abuse as defined or substantial threat of physical abuse or sexual abuse as defined or substantial threat of sexual abuse. The state of Oregon in this amendment is attempting to be more consistent with that. Our current definition of threat of harm is very broad and in fact could include conditions and circumstances that are not within the definitions of abuse as listed above.
Thank you.
Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Chair Tomei. So if the current definition might include things that aren't defined in the statute, are we narrowing the area of protection to children by releasing adults from reporting activities that might be of concern to what many of us might consider to be that child's health and safety?
Chair Tomei, Representative Gelser, it's our position that we are not. We're making it much more clear to the mandatory reporting public. We want this definition of threatened harm to apply specifically to those behavior conditions and circumstances that threaten the safety of children as it relates to physical abuse, sexual abuse, domestic violence, drug-involved households, all of those situations. Those are, in fact, the kinds of situations that mandatory reporters report to us now. And I think that it's consistent with what I think the mandatory reporter believes is their responsibility, but the language in the statute right now is much broader than that.
Can I follow up? What might be some types of things that are currently being reported that people would stop reporting if this language was changed because the law is currently broader than the statute?
Chair Tomei, Representative Geltzer, I suppose it could get into the situation of whether or not a health and welfare could get into a situation about whether or not a child wears a bicycle helmet or whether or not a child wears appropriate padding while they're playing in a football game, or the broadness of the definition goes beyond what we think of as abuse or neglect. And what I'd like to say is that mandatory reporters generally report specifically related to those abuse definitions, and we're making this language in the statute consistent with where the reporting actually is.
Thank you.
Any further questions at this point? Okay, you want to continue?
Certainly. Chair Tomei, members of the committee, as we continue down to line 38, section 2, within that paragraph, and particularly on line 43, the amendment would remove the following language: reports and investigations of situations in which children are abused or likely to suffer abuse, or likely to suffer abuse is the area that provided the unintended consequence of the original amendment. We were looking to provide language that would assist the reporter in sorting out what would trigger their report, and I believe the unintended consequence of that language was that it appeared to substantially broaden that and cause place a responsibility on the mandatory reporter that it's not reasonable in that they would not be able to determine when a child is likely to be abused.
Representative Geltzer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Wouldn't we want people to report prior to a child being injured or abused? So if I'm observing a child and I recognize that there's harm that may be coming to them, I see a series of behaviors, I hear something's about to happen, and then I recognize that something bad is likely to happen to that child, isn't it better for me to report that at that point rather than wait until the child has been injured?
Chair Tomei, Representative Geltzer, I agree with you completely, and I think that is that's really what we're trying to accomplish with the new definition of substantial threatened harm, is to, as the reporter, say, if I'm a teacher in a classroom or I'm someone who's in a position to observe children and I observe a situation that suggests there's behavior or circumstances that threaten the safety of that child as related to one of the abuse categories, then we absolutely would want them to report.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, that raises a question for me back to the definition that you're replacing on substantial threat. It says will experience. Would it make more sense to say will likely experience? I think the will experience puts the burden on the reporter somehow have, you know, can see into the future when what you're really talking about is will likely experience. And I don't know if that clarifies that to get to the point of what you're trying to do, which is to clarify but also make sure that instances do get reported.
Chair Tomei, Representative Kotek. I apologize. Representative Kotek, your point is very well taken, and I've made a note of that.
Thank you. I think where the questions of the two representatives are leading, and my concern too, is I would rather have it broader than more narrow. So I guess I'm somewhat confused why this change. I mean, has it been a problem in the past that if say, a nurse or a teacher saw a child without a helmet, a bicycle helmet, and they reported the child to Child Protective Services? And that might not be an appropriate referral?
Chair Tomei and members of the committee, that's a really good question. I think that mandatory reporting has been consistent with the areas of child abuse or neglect, and this particular threat and harm statute, or the threat and harm definition, as our department was reviewed by the national experts, was an area of weakness, and it was more not so much that mandatory reporters weren't reporting responsibly or reporting in a way that was appropriate. It's that that particular piece of language tended to contribute to a vague part of our practice, and the more concise we can be in language, both in the statute and in our administrative rules, the better we'll serve the population that we need to.
So to follow up on that, so it's a national organization that is suggesting that these definitions be more specific and narrow. Is that what you're saying?
Chair Tomei, we were reviewed by the National Resource for Child Protective Services, and Wayne Holder addressed the legislature last year, and there were a number of areas where we needed to sharpen our practice, sharpen our language, and provide more consistency. And in the area of threatened harm is a statute that causes the mandatory reporter to report, but the definitions in the mandatory reporting statute are the only place that child abuse or neglect are defined. So it defines our work as we move through an investigation and as we move to dispositions as well.
Okay. Do you want to keep on going? Unless there are other questions. Okay.
I'd just like to say, perhaps for brevity, that the language "or likely to suffer abuse" as it occurs in 010 on line 2 has this amendment would remove that. That similar language that's in section 4 on lines 21 and 22 and 23 is being removed by this amendment. On page 4, line 15, again, a similar removal of the language that a child is likely to suffer abuse is being removed. In line 16 through 21,
I'm still stuck on that. That it seems to me you want a reporter to report if a child is likely to suffer abuse.
Chair Tomei and members of the committee, the statute has the ability to define the responsibility or the definition of the trigger to report in the actual definitions of abuse, or they can define that trigger to abuse report abuse in the other portions of the statute, and that was our initial objective in proposing the amendment. The original amendment to the statute was to say, let's remove that threatened harm, because that really is that situation where we don't know if abuse or neglect has occurred, but we believe there's a substantial threat that it has, and we put the language, that trigger to report language, in the other parts of the statute, triggering if you know there's abuse or there's likely to be abuse. That was the feedback that we've gotten from other groups, is that their experience was that seemed to broaden their responsibility as a mandatory reporter substantially. So then at that point we went back to this statute with the assistance of our attorney, looked at it again, and said maybe the best is to define that additional trigger to report again as that threatened harm definition, but sharpen up that definition so that it relates specifically to the other abuse types.
Representative Gilster.
Thank you, Chair Tomei. I'm also stuck on this. I can't find, as we remove all of these references to likely to suffer abuse, where that similar idea is captured in the amendments. As Representative Kotek had mentioned earlier, it seems that it's very focused that it shall, and it just seems so narrow in terms of protecting kids. Am I missing the place where we're giving people the responsibility that if they believe that a child is likely to suffer abuse, they have an obligation to report that and protect that child?
Chair Tomei, Representative Geltzer, if you look at the definitions of abuse, the threatened harm is an abuse definition. So I think that's where possibly some of the confusion is, that if the we're recommending a change to that definition of threatened harm, but that is an abuse definition. So for the mandatory reporter, as they look at their responsibility to report, they have a responsibility to report physical abuse, neglect, sexual abuse, and they have a report to a responsibility to report the threat. The substantial threat of that abuse.
And a follow-up? Yes, but let me say one thing first, if I may. On page 2, you added J, which I think is what you're saying covers all of those other circumstances. So it says substantial threat that a child will experience is be subjected to one of the conditions or circumstances described in this paragraph. So am I correct in assuming that what you're saying is that that will cover all of those other references to, on page 1, that all the references to the threat of substantial abuse?
Or likely,
mm-hmm. Correct.
Yes.
Thank you. Is that correct?
Chair Tomei, that's exactly correct.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, go ahead, Representative Geltzer.
And thank you. You know, that's what I thought that you were referring to. My concern is that the definition of threatened harm, which is removed from the statute, includes threatened harm to a child, which means subjecting a child to a substantial risk of harm, which doesn't define that it's absolutely going to happen. It says the child is at risk. The new language says that the child will experience or be subjected to one of them. So it becomes this definite that the reporter must know that this absolutely, without a doubt, is going to happen, rather than likely, as we're removing from this bill, or substantial risk, which was previously in the statute. So whether it's from the amendment or the original bill, it seems like we're significantly narrowing here the responsibility of a reporter to be able to see into the future and only report if they're absolutely certain that child is going to be harmed.
Chair Tomei, Representative Geltzer, that's a point that's well taken. I believe Representative Kotek made that same point and recommended will likely experience, and that's certainly a good point, and definitely that's not the direction we want to go. We neither want to limit or expand. We want to clarify. So I think that's a point well taken, and we need to look at the addition of that likely.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I just want to comment. I don't have a problem at all with the language and the substitution of what you have identified in subsection J there. I look at it as two different windows of opportunity. The first window of likely is a huge sweeping window. You still have the window of opportunity to look through J. It's narrowed it a little bit more. But the thing is that you get the opportunity too at the same time to look at potential, you know, behaviors that could occur that as a result of the experience that, you know, a child might, you know, be confronted with to move on it. You know, it's not that it's going to be absolute or anything like that, but at least you know, through experience and everything, your red flags come up through that window and say, oh, been there before, seeing that potential exists, I'm moving on it now, rather than, yeah, maybe. You know, and that's, I really like this language, I have to admit.
Representative, or Chair Tomei, Representative Olson, I appreciate those comments. That really is the intent that we hope to achieve with the language.
Okay, did you, Representative Kotek?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I seem to recall that we changed the threat of harm definition a few years back. Is that correct?
Chair Tomei, Representative Kotek, the definition of threat of harm has actually been in the statute for a number of years, and I would like to say I know that the year that it started, but it's been a number of years. We have not changed that definition, but we have made some efforts in our administrative rule to be more consistent and have a more clear application of it in the work that we do in child welfare.
Thank you. Follow up. The reason I bring that up is that, and this goes back to my previous job when we were tracking, I have great concern that if we change the definition, we will stop tracking. And once you stop tracking what's going on for kids, then we lose some kids in the, you know, from the viewpoint of that there are issues, safety issues going on for children. And I know when maybe there was something done in the tracking, because I remember there was a blip in the threat of harm numbers 5 or 6 years ago, and then they continue to go up again. And I hate, you know, every time we readjust definitions, we lose the trend and we lose a sense of what's actually happening for kids. And so that's why I have concerns about how, you know, what we're doing here to make sure that we don't somehow redesign what we've been doing and then we're unable to really get a good handle on the abuse and neglect that's going on in the state.
Sure. Chair Tomei, Representative Kotek, I appreciate your comments. Our intent is to be more consistent with the actual practice around reporting of threat of harm. What we're doing in this definition, more than anything else, is referencing the other abuse forms and saying either this neglect, sex abuse, physical abuse has occurred, or the mandatory reporter believes there's a substantial threat that it will. So that's what we're trying to do. That's actually consistent with the way that people report. It's consistent with the way that we apply it as we move to dispositions on cases. The definition as it stands in the statute doesn't reference the other forms of abuse. It's a standalone definition that does not have the clarity that it needs, but I think that the general population has been moving past that to do what's more appropriate.
So if I could get back to Section G, let's see, this would be on the first page. Right. Oh, so you took that out, correct?
And then Section G would be the current definition that we're recommending would be removed and would be replaced by the definition that you see in the amendment on line 5J.
Correct. Okay.
The amendment doesn't actually say that it's listed to be amended.
Okay. Is there anything further you want to tell us about this bill? We've pretty much gone through it, or are there other...
Chair Tomei, members of the committee, I appreciate the time that you've given to this hearing and also would like to let you know that I appreciate all the comments. We want to make sure that in moving this amendment forward, there aren't any unintended consequences, and we do intend to continue to work with the Defense Bar, with the faith-based community, with the ACLU in hearing their concerns and attempting to clarify those as well. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you. And we're not through with this. We'll probably be calling you up again on a further date. But thank you very much for your testimony. So we have Bruce Fitzwater.
Chairman Tomei, members of the committee, my name is Bruce Fitzwater. I live in Portland, and I'm representing the Christian Science Churches in Oregon, and I'm speaking on a small aspect of this bill, and I appreciate being here today. I think the first thing to say is that we as a church and individuals certainly are supporting every legitimate effort to end child abuse, period, for this community. And we're devoted to that. We're devoted to our children, and we want a community that is devoted to its children. We want them protected in every way possible. I appreciate the work that chance I've had to talk with Ms. Swenson on this issue and other members of the DHS. And as you know, that's still an evolving idea for the bill. And in thinking through this, I want to bring up one small aspect of it that was actually kind of centered some of your discussion in the previous speaker. And that is that usually the thought is, isn't it well to have as broad a reporting as possible? Let's just, you know, bring them all, the fish, in, and then we can sort them out. Well, I think that the community, as a diverse community, I'm thinking of Muslims and people of many different faiths, have different standards, they have different practices. And the purpose of a child abuse bill, reporting bill, is not to be targeting people by their faith or their practices. And it concerns me when someone is saying what is going to likely occur when it hasn't occurred. It's the opinion of the reporter that is being brought forth here. And if the opinion of the reporter is, in a word, prejudiced or not informed, then the parents become the victims of the child abuse for something they haven't done and has not happened. And so my concern here is simply that in understanding what reporting child abuse is, that the child abuse reporters be aware of what the statutes are in Oregon. And so the amendment that I'm offering here to be considered is simply adding a reference to the civil statutes. A reference, it's at the top of my explanation here, to Section B. Now, on the bill here, Section A includes the definition, or all these definitions of abuse that you have been discussing, and then B says abuse does not include reasonable discipline, and then this would attach to that, and it would refer to ORS 419B-103. And on the attached Exhibit A, you have that civil provision. And I feel this would at least alert the people who are training reporters. And this is a significant problem. I myself am a mandated reporter, and I'm always kind of wondering, well, now what does constitute my responsibility here in discerning these things? When you have conscientious people, you need to give them a fairly clear line as to what they're supposed to be reporting on and what they're not. So I'd be glad to answer your questions. Ms. Swanson said, this is still a kind of open situation. We've gotten her proposed amendments Friday, I think, and then today there was a little bit of change again. So we're still looking at what she's doing. We're supportive of the idea of protection, of making clear criteria. It's just that we'd like to have this be considered.
So if I'm understanding what you're saying, you're interested in adding these to the bill. Is that correct?
Adding simply the reference. This would be in B, and this would be under 419B.005 definitions. You have one, which includes 1A, the definition of abuse, and then 1B is saying what abuse is not. And this would follow right in on 1B as a clarification of what abuse is not.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Bruce, I'm curious. As you've done your research and you're presenting this to us, How many other states have a similar caption describing this when it comes to the child reporting?
In the work that I relied on our attorneys to come up with, I think there were 44 states have provisions in this area. But when it comes to reporting, that's the confusing part of it. I really don't understand the reporting in all the other states. I don't know if states use mandatory reporting as we do here.
So, again, following up on Representative Olson's question, so in your third paragraph in your written material, you say Oregon law allows for spiritual treatment through prayer in lieu of medical treatment in the care of children, ORS 419B100. And that's consistent with 44 other states. But that really doesn't have anything to do with reporting, does it?
Well, you see, it does if you particularly ask the reporter what is a likely scenario, you see.
No, I don't see.
Well, the facts are almost the issue here. Many people in this state find spiritual healing to be very effective. And they live that way, and they don't suffer. There's certainly laws against neglect of a child. But healing with spirituality is something that is actively taking place. Now, that's a fact, and it's a broad fact, and it's not an excuse for a child to suffer, but it is a permissible way to heal. Now, if someone has a very material view of causality, they would say anyone who's relying on spiritual healing is going to be in danger. And consequently, they would feel a reason that they should get involved, they should be on their neighbor's case, they should be, et cetera, et cetera. And if they're a mandated reporter, they've got behind them the statute that says you will be fined and convicted if you don't do what you think is likely. So I think we have to build into the concept of likely. We have to go back and look at ourselves as reporters. What do we think is likely to take place? Where does that relate to our prejudices? If you thought that because of a person's race, the parents were not likely to take care of them, or you were much more demanding on the people of a certain race than others, it would be your prejudice that was actually doing the reporting.
So
and that's
I
what I would like to see some awareness of.
Okay, so I can follow up on that. So if a teacher is a required reporter, yeah. So if a child fell in the playground and the child was a member of the Christian Science Church and the child broke her arm, and the teacher might suspect that the family would not take the child to a hospital or an emergency room, then are you concerned that teacher might report that child a possible, this might be a possible neglect situation?
Well, let's take it in pieces here. I mean, if a child broke an arm, you know, period, I would expect the school authorities to notify the parents and to get the child to a medical facility and work it out from there. You see, as far as I know, there would probably be a fairly clear case. But just what you said, Madam Chairman, the teacher would suspect that that's prejudice. Why would a teacher suppose that a family who are of a certain religion would be likely to break the law? Why would you suppose someone of a certain race or a certain ethnic group would be? And that is the self-consciousness that has to be, I feel, brought forth.
I can understand your point, but if I could interject here, but if the teacher had been told by the parent that we practice Christian Science and please notify me if my child has a problem, a physical
yes.
problem, and I will take care of it, and we don't go to hospitals, we don't use MDs, So I guess what I'm trying to get at is then would that teacher be required by this law to...
I would have, as first of all, I can't speak to the law. I mean, I would have no problem with if the teacher felt that that child, you know, had been seriously hurt and was not getting the care. But I think in an immediate situation like that, the child should be cared for immediately. This is something that doesn't go on. But you see, Madam Chairman, in Christian Science, and this is just Christian Science, but we have a very clear provision, it's on page 401 of our textbook, that the setting of broken bones is something that is very well best left to a physician.
Okay.
And so it's perfectly consistent with the practice. In fact, it's better that we do this. Now, many of us have had broken bones taken care of without that. But Christian Scientists are not opposing going to the doctor. They are affirming spiritual healing. And they're also law-abiding. And so if they feel that this is what the law demands of them, they will do it irrespective of whether it is consistent with what they think is the best healing practice.
Thank you very much. Representative Maurer.
Yeah, I guess I have a clarification here. The law, according to ORS 419B.1033, allows the practice that you're testifying to, that spiritual healing is an appropriate way to treat, correct?
Representative Maurer, Chairman Maurer. Again, I'm not an attorney. This is a section from the civil statute. As I'm not aware in Oregon law for children under 14 that there is no exception to, there's no defense from the accusation of mistreatment,
right,
by using spiritual healing. You can still use spiritual healing, as I understand it, and we certainly practice it. It's just that it's not a defense against malpractice or neglect, sorry. So that in most cases, these things are handled so quickly and effortlessly that they never become issues. If they would become an issue, then, of course, this is a judicial civil intervention that can take place. And there also could be, in an extreme case, as I understand it, a criminal prosecution to the parent if they neglect the child.
So your primary concern really is not about that part of it. It's purely about bringing this issue to in the fore of the reporting side so that there's becomes a cultural awareness,
right,
of the fact that we have cultural differences.
That's right. Representative Maurer, yes, that's exactly my concern. And it's really broader than just my faith here. I feel like this is a voice that needs to be heard broadly because, I mean, every show me the person who isn't prejudiced. And prejudice has to do with what we think is going to happen, what we think things are like. And so when you ask people to say what's going to happen or what things are like, you know, they're thinking of what they've experienced. And that's where if they're going to take on this broad authority and you've delegated it to a broad group of people, they really need to have an awareness of the breadth and the multiplicity of means of handling situations in our state.
Thank you, Mr. Fitzwater. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairman.
I notice there are other people in the audience. Is there anyone else who wishes to speak on this bill? All right. We're not going to be having a work session today. I think we need to work a little bit more on this. And any other concerns or questions? And I will close the hearing on House Bill 2189. And any other business that we have for them? He's back Wednesday at 8:30, Andy says. And we're still looking at March 2nd to go down to the coast. But I'm hearing from the Senate side that they're wanting to have their hearing in the afternoon. I'm going to try to work with Senator Berger to see if we can change that to Friday morning, since that seems to work better for this committee. Am I correct in assuming that? So I'll see what I can do and get back to you as quickly as I can. Representative Cowan.
Madam Chair, I believe that they have other issues that they want to talk about, Chair Berger, in that committee, too. So are we necessarily trying to do the whole thing simultaneously?
No. Just okay. Our part of it, I'm hoping that we can change just to the morning. And then
leave them the 2 hours for the rest of the, yeah, because it's a fairly tight time frame in the afternoon, only 2 hours available. I was just trying to clarify.
So do you have any more information than I do about that meeting?
No, sir.
Okay. I'll try to get together with Senator Berger and see if we can work that out. Any other business? All right. I'll close the House Committee on Human Services and Women's Wellness. Oh, and I just want to, before I do that, remind you that the Women's Health and Wellness Coalition is having a breakfast tomorrow morning at 7:30 in room 50. And come, nice food. Thank you. Okay. Yeah.